So much happens in the course of Parshas B'Shalach. The Jewish people run from the Mitzrayim, and that's usually when we think of Parshas B'Shalach, we think primarily about the sort of the Gemar of Yetzias Mitzrayim. On the first day of Pesach is when they leave Mitzrayim, and they're politically freed, but it's still not clear how long it's going to last, and that physical and political freedom is locked into place over the course of much of Parshas B'Shalach when the Egyptian army is neutralized. So now we know that Yetzias Mitzrayim of Tesvav Nisan is going to be a Davar Shel Kayama, which perhaps is why the day of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the day of Kriyas Yamsuf are together a single part of a single Yamtuf, connected by a Chol HaMoed. But that's not all there is in Parshas B'Shalach. Shalach goes on to talk about the Mon. And then at the end, we talk about a different enemy nation. The very end of the Parsha, please help yourself. The very end of the Parsha, Vayavo Amalek Ve'ilachem Yisrael B'Rafidim. The last nine psukim. These are the nine psukim we're going to lay in around a month. The nine pasuk kriya of Purim, exactly. Amalek shows up, Ve'ilachem Yisrael B'Rafidim. And listen to the following pasuk. Vayomer Moshe Yehoshua. Moshe says to Yehoshua, "B'char lanu anashim, choose people for us." But say, "Hilachem b'amalek, choose people." Moshe says to Yehoshua, "You go choose people for us, and you go fight with Amalek. I am going to be al rosh hagiva." Moshe says to Yehoshua, "I'm going to be up on the mountaintop. Mate lokim biyadi. I'll be holding the staff, the wand, with which Moshe had performed so many of the Malkos, and you're going to be the general." Yomer Moshe Yehoshua. So if you look at that pasuk carefully, a lot of points that are intriguing, a lot of points that are puzzling. Let's take a look at the Ramban. A very, very rich Ramban. Perek Zayin pasuk Tes. Yomer Moshe Yehoshua. The first question he has is about those first four words. Anything strike you? It's Shver. Yeah, Yehoshua. Who's Yehoshua? You get exactly as DJ. You get the Parshas Shalach, and it sounds like he had been called Hoshea, the same name as the Navi from the Treyasa, Hoshea. It sounds like the time of the Raglim, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu says we're going to switch your name. The time of the Raglim, that was more than a year later. And that was after, that was in the second year, the spring of the second year. Now we're in the spring of the first year. So who's Yehoshua? Says Ramban, "Yer mikan ki Moshe miyom heyoso lefanav hayakori oso Yehoshua." Ramban says the truth is, if you actually look in Chumash carefully, you'll see that Moshe has been calling Yehoshua all the way through. From the first time that we hear about Yehoshua in the presence of Moshe, you have it here, and then you have it fast forward a couple of prophets. Yishma Yehoshua es kol ha'am, right? And then Hakadosh Amar beina miraglim. What do you do with that pasuk in Shlach? Well, we've heard the name of Yehoshua several times, of course, in Chumash Mos. What's going on in Chumash by Midbar Parsha Shlach? It says, maybe it means, well, that's a hard word to read. Lit mi barishona. It's referring to from the beginning. The pasuk is written there, but it doesn't mean that at that moment when Moshe was sending Yehoshua off to be a meragel, to be a tar, and that's when he called. No, Hodi Anush Kizeh Hoshea Benun Hashem Becharav Bachar Beragel Hu Hashem Kra'o Moshe Yehoshua. Moshe had already been calling him Yehoshua. Interesting. Almost as though sounds like he's saying his name always had been Hoshea, and Moshe had already started calling Yehoshua. From an earlier point, we only know, seeing the psukim, the connection between Moshe and Yehoshua now. They may have known each other for years, hard to know. But Moshe had always called him Yehoshua, even though his given name was Hoshea. Now, the psukim don't explain in Parsha Shlach why he calls him Yehoshua. But the Gemara does. The Gemara quotes Masor Tarshapel. The added yud was Yehoshua. Ka, Kadosh Baruch Hu will be Moshiach you. Kadosh Baruch Hu will save you from being pulled into negative peer pressure, the horrific negative peer pressure. Think about, you know, the impact of peer pressure, of negative peer pressure. It's arguable that there might not be a single, you'd be hard pressed to find another situation of negative peer pressure that had worse consequences. No? You know, what the Rambam accomplished, Lara, in terms of Jewish history. Kadosh Baruch Hu davens that the Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu davens that Kadosh Baruch Hu should save Yehoshua. La'agid, you know, what was the question?
La'chava and snake.
Okay, that's a good point. Right. Okay, that's another contender. M'chava gives it, or Adam. Right. Adam goes along with Chava. Usually, yeah, that's peer pressure. That's a good point. I'm not sure I'd call Chava the snake peer pressure. But maybe Adam and Chava. Oh, no, Mark, he us kavala Moshe also Hashem b'fnei Eda, so you crush him on Hoshe by Hishmo Yehoshua. So either, I'm sorry, he skipped along here. He says, Chazal explained, Kol Yeshua Chomer Tzatz Meraglin, the name was a tefillah, the Yehoshua was a tefillah, la'agid ki ba'vodeh ha'maisa shalim Moshe Yodeya, shu'a sila lechis, the Meraglin, karlo Hashem hazeh. Oh! What Rabban says, look, on the one hand, the naming is referred to Rosh Hashanah in year 2, 2449. On the other hand, the name's already being used here. So the Rabban says, well, maybe it means that Moshe had always, had for a while, been calling him Yehoshua instead of Moshe. Huh? So then, but then why does it only describe, why is the naming, the change, describe Rosh Hashanah? He says, because that's where it was, that was the cause of it. The cause of it, it was a tefillah. Moshe calls it Yehoshua as a by way of tefillah that Kadosh Yehoshua Kadosh Ka Yehoshua Chomer Tzatz Meraglim. So maybe Moshe was calling that for a year, for 10 years. I don't know how long, but 10 years. Moshe was a million 10 years on it. But the reason why he was doing it was because of what's going to happen in Shlach. So we already hear him called Yehoshua. But when we get onto Shlach, Torah says, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu a while ago had called this Hoshea fellow Yehoshua because of what's about to happen. Okay, that's pshat number one, Rabban. And pshat number two is, or maybe not, maybe something did happen then. Ki oz kavala Moshe osa Hashem. Maybe that is when Moshe renamed him. Aye, but it's already in Shmos here in Beshalach and later on by the Meraglim, but by Chet Ha'ego. The answer is, well, maybe that's when he named it Bifnei Ha'eda. So you crush my own Hoshea by Yishmo Yehoshua. Maybe Moshe privately called him Yehoshua. But he only went public right before they left to the on the trip to Eretz Yisrael. But now the Ramban says, okay, so that's the first question. You've got to think about that some more. Maybe there are other approaches also. Maybe the Torah is referring to him as Yehoshua now, even though his name would only be changed later. Maybe at the time it wasn't called Yehoshua. Got to figure that out. Then Rabban says, that's just the opening question. Now let's get into the core of what's going on in this pasuk. But whatever his name is, right, Moshe tells him, Yehoshua, what? He says, "B'char lanu anashim, choose for us, lanu, choose for us people, v'tzehi lachem b'amalek. Choose for us people, and you go fight." That's how a Jewish leader acts. You go fight. I'll hang back. I'll be on the mountaintop. And you'll go. The Hatam Shetziva Moshe Yehoshua Lilachem Ba'amalek. It's fascinating. And this is the first war, the first Jewish war, the first war of the Jewish army. And the general is not Moshe Rabbeinu. Later on, Chumash Bamidbar, we're going to see in year 40, there were wars with Moshe Rabbeinu general. They can see Chunanog and so forth. But here, Moshe is not generally. What happened? Why did he send Yehoshua to be the general? And then he says, Rabban has a couple of approaches. Let's see what he says. Benesios Kapayim al Rosh HaGidva. The puzzle goes on to explain. I need you, B'char Lanu Anashim. You're choosing it for us. I'm in the team with you. You're choosing it our army, not your army. But I have a different role to play. I'm going to be up down on the mountaintop. And why is he up down on the mountaintop? Anochi Nitzav Rosh HaGivah. Why? It says Ramban, the Allah Shab. Why do you have to daven mountaintop? Is that like a chumrah? Is it Midas Chasidus? It's a minute, you only daven mountaintop? The guys in the valley say, so I have to go up to the mountaintop to daven. Well, why is Moshe have to daven mountaintop? What's with the mountain? It's Harabais, I understand. When I go to Harabais, that's a Makam Kodesh. That's a Makam Yuchid for the Kabbalah Satsvila. But stop, this is, I don't know, this wasn't Har Sinai either. Har Sinai wasn't special at that point. It wasn't Har Sinai. They weren't even in Midbar Sinai yet. They were in Midbar Sin, perhaps. A different area. So what's going on? Allah Shab Kadeshi here, as Israel Amil Chamim, Yasim Eino Alei Lutok. And as we read the Ramban, by the way, we should think about to what extent is he giving us ideas that we might be able to apply ourselves as well. So he says, number one, Ramban says, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to daven up on the mountain instead of just down where everyone else was, right through the mountain. So we get to mountain climbing Parshas Yisro. But why do they have mountain climbing in Parshas Bishalach? So Ramban says, reason number one, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to be able to see Klal Yisro. He wanted to see for whom he's davening. That would inspire him to have a Yasim Eino Alei L'Tov. What does that mean? Put his eyes in for good. Does that mean that he'll be more, the davening will be more intense when he's thinking more directly of who he's davening for? Or does that mean the Hashpa Moshe watching himself would be helpful? Sounds like it was going to inspire his davening. You know, in shul, there's a long mishaberach list. There's a mishaberach for Harlem. So that can be a little hard sometimes to get enthused about. You don't really know who these people are. The truth is, people don't know who the people are. There are Jews out there who are suffering. I can imagine what that means. I can begin to imagine what that means. So I should care. Okay, so that's an exercise in caring, what we were talking about earlier this morning. Again, outside the box, I don't know these people. I can care about people whom I don't know. But at the same, and that's an important aspect of Avodah to work on. But at the same time, when I know who that name is, I know that person. I know who we're diving for. It means something more. To think about, to try to feel more whom I'm davening for, to be more connected to the target subject, the target of my tefillah. That's number one. Number two, the gam hein yiru so poreis kapav hashamayma umar betefillah v'yivet dechuvo v'yosifu ometz ugvura. He says number two, he wasn't only to enhance his ma'isa tefillah, he wanted Klal Yisrael to see his act of tefillah. And that would give them Ometz Ugvura. That's where Ramban perhaps taking an approach with the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, the end of the third paragraph of Rosh Hashanah. Mishnah says, comments on a couple of lines later, the Torah tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu would pick up his hands, then the Jewish people would be successful. When he would put down his hands, then the Jewish people would start to lose. The Gemara says, well, what's that supposed to mean? So the Mishnah says, "V'chiyadav shamosha otzus lachama." Mishnah Rosh Hashanah tells us now. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were supernaturally controlling the lachama. No, the Mishnah says, right. It inspired them to when his hands were up, that recentered Klal Yisrael, the Jewish soldiers, on Avim Shabbat Shemayim. The Chabalim Avim Shabbat Shemayim. So Ramban, how do you understand that? So I think sometimes we think it means like, because Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were pointing upwards, like an arrow. Ah, it was a sign. I think that's the way we usually read that mission. It was a sign. You looked at Moshe Rabbeinu, you saw him pointing up. That sort of refocused you. Think about it, Kodesh Baruch Hu. It was a holy billboard. Aren't that many of those? It was a holy billboard. You looked up the top of the mountain, and then you see Moshe Rabbeinu pointing up. I think that's the way we usually read that Mishnah. Now, Bob perhaps is giving us a different twist. It wasn't that they saw Moshe Rabbeinu, and they saw him pointing, hands off, and he was pointing like a visual sign. No. They saw him davening. When they saw Moshe Rabbeinu davening, that gave them more Ometz Gvura,
that reminded them who's in charge of this war. That reminded ultimately Kadosh Baruch Hu is driving their success in this war. And then he says a third pshat. Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, a very ancient medrash, Pirkei Rabbi Elazar goes back to the days of Tanan. They add, Kol Yisrael Yatzu Chutzal Aleihem. The other Jews walked out of their tents. The Ro'u es Moshe Korea al Birka. And they see Moshe Rabbeinu on his knees, davening to Kadosh Baruch Hu. They ain't Korah al Birka. So they would be down there, get down on their knees. No Zapanavar. So they say he's been now fully Mishtachavet. Kriya just means bowing and kneeling. And Mishtachavet is where you're flat out on the ground. So they see that he is. No fell part of our so right, they hang over there, so they would put their face there. They see him raising his hands to Shemaim. The hand person said they were trying. They would raise their hands to the Shemaim. To shame Sheshliach Tibur Mispalil Kach Kalaam Oninachar. The Sheshliach Tibur davens, and everyone responds. Everyone repeats what the Sheshliach Tibur said. The Hippil HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Hamalek Vesam Yad Yoshua. And then, what happened as a result, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the Amaleki army lose to the Jewish army. So what's the third Nekuda? Which Jews are we talking about here? Which Jews are watching Moshe Rabbeinu?
The war.
Exactly. They're not the soldiers. The soldiers are out in the field. They're the people who welcome more work. Not everyone was on the battlefield. So either he was up on the mountain to enhance his own davening, because he could see for whom he's davening, like the Gemara Sigon comments are based on the pasuk, I believe, in Treyasar. The Hayu, I think it's the Gemara in Horius. The Hayu Einecha Ra'os is Merah. That is power to seeing your Rebbe. Gemara Sigon makes a remarkable comment. Yehuda Hanasi said, the reason why Yehuda Hanasi was very much Seich Merah, it's safe to say. And so Yehuda Hanasi said, The fact that I was as matzliach as I was in learning is because when I sat in shir, I was able to see the back of Reb Meir's head. It was in Reb Meir's yeshiva. Reb Meir was a talmud of Reb Akiva, and Reb Yonasi was a talmud among others of Reb Meir. So he said the place I was sitting, I was able to see like the side, the back of his head. They sat, the Rebbe sat in the center, all the time he sat around in circles. So he was in a spot where he was able to see part of the Rebbe, able to see the back of his head. So because of that, Hayyur Nefer was able to watch the Rebbe, and that's why there's so much outside. And I believe he's going to go out and say, he says, imagine if I was able to sit in front, and let's see his face, not just the back of his head, then, mamash, yeah, really would have been matzliach. Now, obviously, that's not the only thing. Hayyur Nefer was not the only ingredient to the recipe, because, obvious proof, because that someone else was sitting in front that was looking at Reb Meir's face and did not become Yehuda Hanasi. Yehuda Hanasi became Yehuda Hanasi. So it's not like look at the Rebbe, all of a sudden become big Tamar. No. He has to work hard. But that's something that can enhance. Whether it's something psychological, I think the way the Meiri explains, or supernatural. So some understand means I'm looking at the Rebbe while I'm learning, so that's somehow part of the Hashra Rechness is going to carry over more. And Meiri says, and he's now more focused. Long before smartphones, Talmidim and Yeshivas struggled with maintaining focus during Yeshiva. Apparently, it's an ancient problem. It goes back at least 2,000 years. And maybe more. So as Meiri says, this is going to mean. So I didn't have to roast the Marach, huh? Yonasi said, I was seeing a spot, I was able to watch Rabbi Meir. That can't make focus. I wasn't sitting near the window, watching the peacock strut by, so then that would have been distracting with the words as well. Because in a place I was able to focus on the Rebbe, I didn't look down, didn't look to the side, I was watching my Rebbe, and was getting cheered, so I was in the zone. So a similar thing going on over here. It's Rabban's first chat. Moshe Rabbeinu is looking at the people that he's diving for. And again, I'm not sure what Rabban means, one way or the other. He didn't mean, in some supernatural sense, the fact that he was looking at the people made the tefillah more powerful. He was Moshe Rabbeinu. Or it just means, very simply, that Moshe was watching them
And that's why he was focused. He wasn't getting distracted by what was going on the side. He was in the zone. Number two is the people who were being davened for, they knew the Moshe was davening for them. So that gave that enhanced their bitachon. It reminded them where their success really lies. The Chavnim Nibam, as the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says, Lavim Shvash Shemayim. So they were more Matzliach. And finally, he was inspiring everyone else to daven too. Question. Your question.
Yeah.
One for now,
okay. According to the second chapter, there's davening.
Yeah.
What do you do with the fact that, like, when you're standing, when in order to be counted as standing by tefillah, you can't, like, be leaning, and then if you let go, you fall. If you let go, you fall. It doesn't count as standing. Somewhere I heard that from Rabbi Jacobson.
Okay.
So, what do you do? Moshe put his hands on the rock, and it was not the same thing as he...
If Tralpidin, if you're muta, if you're leaning on something, so as the Gemara says, if you're being supported by what you lean on so much, and if you take it away, it fell and fall, and he's not considered to be an omi.
So how did the hands?
So his hands were on the rock. Okay.
And they were on the rock, so.
Okay. So that's fine.
He's touching and not leaning on it.
But he didn't, so his hands were not standing. But I don't think here his hands are to be standing.
They were up.
They were up. Okay. But here, Rabbi, we've saved the best for last. Rabban says, so first Rabban built a very technical point. The name Yehoshua, Hoshea, Yehoshua, when did it change? What's going on? It changed now, it changed later, it changed now, but it's mentioned later because that was the point of it. Or it changed later, but it's mentioned after that, so his name ultimately will be. And then Rabban moves to step two, which is, why? What's the point of Moshe? Moshe has to daven, and he has to daven on the mountain. He's davening that the mountain is enhancing his own tefillah. The mountain enables the soldiers to see Moshe Rabbeinu's davening, and that enhances their bitachon. Or that Moshe Rabbeinu's davening is going to inspire everyone else to daven. Let's skip a couple lines down to the third of the three segments of this Rambam. The second to last line. This whole enterprise, this whole approach by Moshe, with the hands up, and he can't, as Rabban said, he can't be the general because he needs to be dominating, he needs to be dominating the mountain, enhancing his tefillah very, very much. I mentioned before that we do see Moshe in generally the Jewish army in Shnas Harbad. We don't find anywhere else that Moshe needed to get up on the mountain and put his hands up so the Jewish soldiers would succeed. So however you understand, it was to enhance his tefillah, it was to enhance the soldiers' bitachon, it was to bring, enhance his own tefillah, most of it his own tefillah, or kolel, the other people will be davening as well, or it's to enhance the bitachon of the soldiers. Why do we only need this technique here? There are other wars in the Chumash. The reason why you need this entire technique, davki, here, number one, what was the difference between the war against Amalek and others? What was unique? Oh, he says, number one, Shayamalek goy eson v'chazak ma'od. They were unusually militarily powerful, tough group, and on the other corner of the river, Yisrael ainim alum de mochav. The Jews were not, had no practice. The Jews had no training. L'ro'osa me'olam. They'd never even seen war. They had been slaves of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was a dominant, powerful country. War had never been incursion, military incursions by an enemy into Mitzrayim. They never saw this before. They don't know what they're doing. They're rookies. And the Chumash itself points this at the beginning of the parasha. Pen yinachayim ha'am, beri osam l'chama, v'shavu Mitzrayim. They'd never seen war. So, on one level, this is unique militarily, strategically. The unique strength of Amalek and the unique inexperience of Kalal Yisrael. So, Avahu Ayefi Ageya. The Kazim Mishatar, you get to Parsha Zachar, Parsha Kisei. So the Torah refers back there to remembering this story. It says, Ata Ayefi Ageya. Kalal Yisrael were not powerful. Alkein Pachad Mehem. So Moshe Rabbeinu was more concerned than what would be in later military encounters when
perhaps the opponent was not as powerful as Amalek, and certainly at that point, Klal Yisrael had more confidence. Okay? That's why you need all this unique approach to tefillah. And then, number two. Then Moshe said, maybe also Moshe was worried, not just that Amalek happens to be powerful and the Jews happen to be, at this point, inexperienced, but who did they come from? Where did they come from? From the nation, the God of Bracha, Achar Bachatichya. They have the Yerusha of the sword. From the bracha of the Zaki, the bracha of Yitzhak Avinu, Shar Malach, Harbachatichia. And then he goes on to say, so that's why it's Amalek, specifically, Sichon and Og are from Canaan. They're not from Esau, but Amalek is from Esau. And then he makes a third fascinating point that brings it home. The 6 minutes that we're in. Ki amulchama min ha-mishpacha ha-zos, hi ha-rishona v'ha-acharona li-Yisrael. The war with this group, this family, is the first and last wars of the Jewish people. This was their first war. The first time the Jewish people ever had a military encounter. They didn't have a military, they didn't have war with the Mitzrim. You can describe a Kaddish Baruch Hu, Hashem Yishmocha. Hashem went to war with the Mitzrim. But the Jews were clearly totally passive. The first time the Jews are in military engagement is against Amon. This is their first war. He says that it also will ultimately be the final war. The final war is going to chiasmic structure. The last war that Klaus will ever have to engage in Jewish history will be with Amalek. Ki Amalek mizera Esav. Umimenu ba'o elena al-Muhammad reishas aben. Muhammad begins here. Umizar shal Esav ha'ilal ha'dalos v'achor ben ha'afram. The last time that Esav Esav would be destroyed, v'chor ba'asheni, at the hands of the Romans, kasha yom now. What does Rome have to do with Amalek? Kasha yom rabo seinu sha'arach ha'yom v'gol z'edom. Chazal often referred to Rome, and specifically to the destruction of Second Beis Hamikdash and the ensuing Golos that was brought on by the Roman Empire, referred to often as Golos Edom. Chasher yinutzach hu, v'yei chalesh, hu v'amim rabim v'sher yitom, v'menu nivashay el yolam. He says, this Golos that we're in now is the last Golos. And when the final war comes and goes, and ends as Galus, that will have been the final Galus, a Galus with Edom. Is that what the Nevi'im said? Olam Hashem Barzion Shpoz Harisav, Ha'isav Hashem HaMelucha. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Melucha will be fully revealed, the Mos HaMashiach, when the Moshi and Bahar Tzion go to judge those who are on Har Esav. This is a reference to what Yechezkel refers to as Mechamas Galulogo, the final war over who controls Eretz Yisrael, which is the Nevi'im tell us is the final war in advance of Bias HaMashiach. There are many who thought that that was World War I, there many thought that was World War II, and perhaps, in a sense it was. It has been ongoing conflict ever since, and right after World War II is when the process of what looks like the process of Geula began to unfold, which is a Kibbutz Kalias, and Kalias having political control over Eretz Yisrael. The Hinei Kol Asher Asu Moshe Yehoshua. And Bob says, once you have this perspective that this war against Amalek was the first time the Jews went to war, which means, practically speaking, that the Jews were at a unique disadvantage, never again would they be so inexperienced. Point number one. Number two, they're fighting against B'nai Esav, who have the bracha of Yaakov of Yitzhak, and number three, he says, this is the first war, but it's also a portent of the last war. So we haven't really seen Ma'isav a similar Banim in the Rabban outside of Chumash Bereishis. But he's sort of, without using that terminology, sort of saying, this was an episode that happened to Klal Yisrael at the time, but it was also sort of like setting up a paradigm. For it's almost like a nevuah for what would happen in the end. And that's why Moshe was handling it differently than he would handle any other war, which is just in the war against Sichon and Og was a war. So Moshe was a general. He led a strong, successful battle against Sichon and against Og. But here, it wasn't the same thing. Here, it was more than just that we're fighting Amalek right now in the year 2448. This is almost like a nevuah
Paul Dimion, what's going to be in the future. That's how Rabban ends. V'nei kosher asu Moshe v'Yehoshua imahem barishona. That which Moshe and Yehoshua did with Amalek the first time around, and here comes a concept we don't often hear about. Yasu Eliyahu u'Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef im Zar'am. That's what Yehoshua, Eliyahu, and Mashiach ben Yosef will do with the Zera Amalek in the future. Alken hisamets Moshe b'davar. That's why Moshe was invested in the tefillah of this war in a unique way. It sounds like he wasn't just davening for then; he was davening for the future as well. Who's Mashiach ben Yosef, by the way? Who or what is Mashiach ben Yosef? So actually, has a footnote here. You send you down, what did I tell you? Sukkot, Nunbez, Nunbez. The one place in all of Shas, I believe, where there's reference to Mashiach ben Yosef. You hear about Mashiach ben David often. Mashiach ben Yosef shows up in that one place. Who or what is Mashiach ben Yosef? I think they say the name of the Talmidim, right, the name of the Nagon. They felt that if he had only come to the to this planet in order to be Masber, the Inyan of Mashiach ben Yosef, it would have... It would have already fulfilled this topic. Well, the government had a lot to say about all of Torah, so it seems like he took this pretty seriously. The other, the Kol HaTar, the other Svarah written by several of his Talmidim, and his Torah on Geula in general and Mashiach ben Yosef in particular, I think he explains the following briefly. Some people talk more in Chodesh Iyar. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin of Sarichas that there are two different ways that Bias and Mashiach can play out. Bias HaMashiach could play out in sudden, dramatic, and totally miraculous fashion, or Bias HaMashiach could unfold very slowly and naturally. And the Gemara, points out that Steers and Sukkim, the different Nevi'im describe Bias HaMashiach in different ways, or Chaim points out in Parshas Balak Dylan describes Bias HaMashiach in different ways. The Gemara says, it's not a Stira, it has two options. If we're Zocha, the Mashiach comes ahead of schedule because we were Zocha to Mashiach, it'll be immediate and totally miraculous. If Mashiach comes because it's time for Mashiach to come, be Ita, today Mashiach, well, Akash Baruch will be Mashiach, because that's what his plan is, but the end goal will be the same, but the route to get there will be slower and unbroken Hamar. Be slower, more gradual, and a form more natural process. The end goal will be the same. Mashiach ben David, ruling Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, So I think Vilgan explains that Mashiach ben Yosef refers to the natural process that will precede B.S. Mashiach ben David, which we hope is the process that we're living through, and Klal Yisrael have been living through for the last century or so, the last number of decades. So Moshe Rabbeinu Rabban says, was davening then for now. And that's why this tefillah was way, way beyond. But we can ourselves, as I said before, there are elements of Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah that we can take into our own tefillah. In terms of figuring out how to focus, and in terms of recognizing the impact that our tefillah can have on other people, and seeking to lead other people in being similarly focused in their tefillah. Abay Sain, very much.
Yeah. Is it time?